Expounded Universe, Season 12, Episode 3, In and Out Borgles. The book, The Ruins of Dantooine, by Veronica Whitney Robinson and Hayden Blackman. The year, 2004. Chapters 4 and 5, with your hosts, Jeff and Thomas. I'm just kidding, it's always John. Let's go!
Welcome back to the belated announcement of Expounded Universe. Why is it an announcement? What's wrong with me?
What?
I don't know, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's an Expounded Universe. Welcome to our announcement.
Yeah, smoke your maroon and yellow cigars. I think that's the colors on this logo, right?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
There's a glowing blue or something because there's like a lightsaber microphone. In case you've been wondering what the fuck that logo's supposed to be. Sorry, yeah. I'm not really very good at graphic design. There's a reason I got fired from that.
Let's set the forest on fire. It's a Star Wars.
Yeah, we're doing those new podcast announcement parties. Extremely bad for California.
Oh, yeah. In fact, yeah. That's what it's called. Extremely bad for California, the podcast.
Every week we go out in the woods and we blow something up to let people know that a baby has a genital.
One genital, please.
Please pull the second window.
This is a genital Wendy's.
Sir, this is a genital Wendy's. Motherfucker. This never even started on the rails.
Nope, we're just a little punchy. It's fine.
Both of us are really craving a quality donut. I think we talked about that before the show started.
Oh, God, I want it so bad.
Yeah, I want a quality donut. I live across the street from a goddamn Krispy Kreme, and that shit, and I know, and I apologize to those of you who are like Krispy Kreme heads and can't go to one because they're rare or whatever the fuck, but their donuts are the McDonald's of donuts, and fuck them forever, and I want a good donut from a place called Donut, and I want it right now.
Yeah, I want to go to a donut place that's called, like, Yum Donuts or Jolly Donut or whatever, and just give me a nice twisty glaze, and I will be a happy boy.
Yeah, that's all we're asking. Is that so much to ask?
I mean, it's not so much to ask, but...
Actually, it's surprisingly little, and really the only thing holding us back is good civic responsibility and the fact that we're recording right now.
Yeah, and laziness. Mostly laziness for my part.
That's fair, yeah. And I can't go into restaurants. I have a two-year-old attached to me at all times during business hours.
Yes.
And I'm not taking her into a walk-in donut place. I just am medium responsible as a person.
Yes.
That's why I got fired from that graphic design job. So on this show, we kind of just sort of talk our way through old expanded universe Star Wars novels. In this case, we're making our way through the one based on the MMO, not the good MMO, the other MMO. And today, we're covering chapters 4 and 5, in which our main character, Dusk Mistflyer, too flustered by having met a sexy man, must retreat to the nearby Moon of Rory to channel those feelings into some good old-fashioned bioengineer exploration of a mysterious species of bat monsters.
Yeah, and I get it, you know. Even without the needing to run away from the very sexy gentleman that has caught her eye, like, she just found out that there was some species she's never heard of before that no one has been able to find out anything really about because they're so dangerous, and I get that that's her thing. So, like, even without it, I understand why she's doing it. But,
oh, sure, I get it.
Man, it's a lot of resources.
Yeah. It's a lot of resources to spend on heading on up to a moon so you can see some bats.
Yeah. And of course...
So Rory... Go ahead.
The thing I love is that the chapter starts out with one of those in media res beginnings where it then will stop and go like 5 hours earlier and one of those things.
Yeah.
Because we start out and Dusk's just like, where are you? And she's worried and like waist deep in a marshy bog and can't find Tendao, and she's so afraid. And then we cut to when they first arrive on the planet. And
Moon.
Well, whatever. Moons are like a planet.
Yeah, well, yeah, in Star Wars, they officially are, yes.
Yeah. Like, you can go to Endor, and it's the planet of Endor, and you can also go to the forest moon of Endor, called Endor.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's precedent, and I'm just being pedantic. Please do carry on.
The reason I love that beginning, specifically, is because, I mean, spoiler for later in the chapter, I guess, but once we get to this point, later in the chapter, when she's like, oh no, I'm in a marshy bog and I'm alone, it is literally one sentence later, she goes, oh, there's Tendao, and just walks over to him. Like,
yep.
They play this at the start as this huge cliffhanger of like, oh no, what's going to happen? And it is nothing. Absolutely
oh, yeah, it's
nothing.
It's just like when we were reading the Zack and Hool, whatever those were called. Zack and Hool.
You couldn't even say Tash.
I named who I named. But it's because I was thinking of the scene where Zack tries to go into Hool's office and he's a scary monster right now. And that's the cliffhanger for one of the chapter breaks. And then when the chapter break or the chapter starts up again, it's just the monster turns back into Hool and he's like, hey, man, what are you doing in my office? But we have landed on the swampy moon of Naboo known as Rory. And we are currently in the city of Narmal.
Yes,
well, Narmal. We were anyway.
We start there. That's the first official colony. We get Narmal. And of course, there's one other colony on this planet. It's Abu Dhabi.
And people will often send stuff from Narmal to Abu Dhabi. Yes, there's the Garfield joke everyone was hoping for, the dead Garfield joke, because I don't think Nermal's been in Garfield since like 1991.
Oh, I bet you Nermal has. They don't throw away anything over at the Garfield place.
Garfield throws away everything. If there's one thing you can credit Garfield with, it's not getting attached to the side characters.
Ah, come on. I mean, granted, they're not like garbage ape Heathcliff level, but still.
I'm just saying, when was the last time Arlene was in a Garfield comic strip? When was the last time Lyman was in a Garfield strip? I bet you Liz hasn't even been in one in 6 years.
I tell you what, I don't know, and neither do you, because who the fuck is reading Garfield?
This guy, religiously. You know, I probably ought to tell you about my other podcast now, John.
It's a religious podcast for Garfield.
It's a religious Garfield podcast. We call it the Garfcast, a God Network show. And all I do is read the Garfield podcast and try to find strong Christian overtones in the messaging of the Garfield. Now, normally that's difficult because usually he's just like, I like chicken.
Liver. Meow mix, please deliver.
And I'm like, are we or not all waiting for our own personal meow mix to deliver? And I think his name is Jesus.
Let me spin my hat around and turn this chair. Let me talk to you about Garfield.
God damn it.
we are still on the first page.
Here's the thing. This episode, or this pair of chapters is, at least the first one, alarmingly boring considering how interesting the source material should be. They're on a barely explored swamp moon. They're looking for poisonous, ultra-dangerous vampire monster bats. And yet, somehow, it's just boring. She's stumbling her way through the jungle, still choked up with pain and uncertainty because a boy showed interest in her, and also because he was from the Rebel Alliance, and that's got her thinking and questioning her own loyalty to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, after wandering through the woods and jungle and swamp for quite some time, just going from biome to biome as quickly as I can remember which one she's actually in. They stop to start a fire and have a conversation. I'm surprised that it's not a night stay. They're just walking along. She gets tired, so she stops and starts a fire so they can talk for 20 minutes.
Yeah. I don't really know what the timeline is for this little adventure on Rory, because we get a lot of text about them, like, tromping through swamp, and you know, they set up camp more than once, but it never really seems like they spend the night anywhere. It's like every time they set up camp, they'll just rest and then keep going. I honestly don't know if this was a day trip or if they spent like a couple of days out here.
Yeah, I have no idea at all. I assume day trip because, yeah, like I said, they start the fire. They have a brief conversation about the Rebel Alliance, and then they put out the fire and keep walking.
Yeah.
And what happens is that rather than bringing Tendao her thoughts about the Rebel Alliance guy, Finn, she instead starts by point blank asking him, Tendao, are you an Imperial bioengineer? I guess with the idea that maybe she's hoping he is also challenging his entire self-identity at the moment.
I
don't know. Basically, it's that she saw him talking to that Bothan woman in the casino a chapter or two ago. And I think in her own head, she's kind of spun up that Bothans are all rebel spies. And so obviously he was talking to a rebel spy.
Which, I mean, yeah, probably.
I guess. I mean, that's kind of racist on her part, but she is in the Empire.
Yeah, and this is Star Wars, so, you know, anything that would be racist is actually 100% true about any given species.
All Bothans are spies, all Rodians are related, all Rodians are related to all Bothans. Yeah, it's all true.
They're all squares and rectangles simultaneously.
Everyone's favorite kind of peanut butter is the same on Botha Wooey. By the way, that's the name of the planet that they're from. Botha Wooey. So, you know, obviously he's a little taken aback by this question, but he answers very philosophically. He's like, yeah, I am at the moment, absolutely. I obviously you seem to be having some questions about whether or not you're an Imperial bioengineer. And so eventually she spills the beans. I met a fellow, he was from the Rebel Alliance. I thought he was hitting on me, but it turned out he actually just wanted me to help him get somewhere using my Imperial credentials. And I'm worried that I'm feeling like I might turn traitor. Now, Tendao, and she also does question that she saw Tendao talking to some guy, some woman in the bar that was clearly not who she thought he was supposed to be talking to. He had said he was going to go off and talk to some famous Coruscant traitor.
Yeah, but, you know, she sees him talking to some random person she's never seen before that is a Bothan. And, I mean, most of this chapter, like, this conversation happens like 10 pages later from the beginning, and it's the most of the way when they're just sort of making their way downtown, walking fast, faces past in their homebound, is Dusk spends a lot of time being like, ooh, I'm overanalyzing, you know, if Tendao's like, ooh, we should take some samples over here. She's like, yes, samples, you say, and just being real suspicious. And the reason she's spilling the beans really is she's like, you're my good friend and I cannot actually go about my daily life continually being suspicious of you because of my shit. So
yeah,
now, I gotta tell you what happened to me and you need to tell me what happened to you.
Yes, although he is actually fairly evasive. He doesn't answer the question of who that was. When she point blank asks him, hey, who was that Bothan? He thinks for a second and he goes, oh yeah, that was Bothan these nuts.
Ah, yes! Got him!
Yeah, said a passing Borgle.
A nearby Borgle doing its mating cry. Got him! Got him!
Yeah, in all seriousness, he doesn't really answer. Instead, he's like, oh yeah, I'm on my own journey. You have to be on your own journey. I feel like we may be heading in the same direction, but I can't make any decisions for you, and you can't tell me what to do either. But the important thing is, know that you're safe to talk here. There's not going to be any judgment on my part.
Yeah, I mean, both of them are like, I'm struggling with what we're doing. You know, we already know Dusk's backstory as far as why she would struggle with doing anything as far as the Empire is concerned. But we also get a little bit of Tendao, who's like, yeah, when I first signed up, mostly I just, you know, wanted to see all of Mother Jungle and all her many incarnations. I wanted to go all around to the different planets and see all the different nature things. And it was almost a religious thing rather than just scientific curiosity. And at some point, he got recruited into Imperial service. And at that point, he's like, well, you know, now I'm here. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just remembered. I don't know why I'm thinking it's so funny, but I'm just remembering now that a lot of the start of this chapter was also her being surprised and concerned that Tendao was going to bring a gun on their walk through a jungle.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to go see some incredibly deadly unknown species of bat. I will bring a gun. And she's like, a gun? What?
Oh, I was just going to bring an apple, a basket. Sorry, that was a reference to an old play. Okay.
An apple basket.
So she gets really concerned about this this gun, and she's like, oh, it's sleek and black and terrifying, and I'm immediately intimidated by its sleek blackness. And its black sleekness. And
thank you.
He's just like, what? It's self-defense. We're going into a nasty swamp full of monsters. That's what this place is famous for. And she's still just like, I don't know. Anyway, they notably do not know where they're going. They generally know that it's somewhere southwest of Narmal.
Yeah, they're just kind of fucking around in a jungle swamp, and it's weird that they're like, oh yeah, we're definitely high-ranking, very good at our job bioengineers, and we're just gonna head off with, like, a knife and a dream into a jungle.
You're very good, very competent bioengineers with unlimited access to the resources needed to get up to the moon in the first place, and yet your clout does not warrant a couple of speeder bikes? Why are you walking?
Oh, yeah, especially because you have Tendao with you. His whole thing is he gets uncomfortable walking on, like, planets and moons and any natural habitat, and you couldn't spare even the cost of one bike so that he could ride.
Yeah, it's very unusual. Or any one of the various local Naboo-type animals. They could have gotten that, what are they called, Picos, or I don't know, whatever the big things that Gungans have walking around with them. But eventually, after a couple whatevers of traipsing, we don't know time units here, units of traipsing through these woods, they find a cave entrance that Dusk is fairly certain is a Borgle bat burrow. It's a Borgle bat burrow, and I bought it for Belinda's birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. They head in.
Now, of course, before that, we have to get to the swamp. You're just cutting over, like, so many pages.
Please, do tell.
So, yes, after their little conversation, and they're like, all right, you know, I've got to do my path, and you've got to do yours, and who knows, maybe you'll stay with them, maybe you won't. They end up getting into just an absolute nasty goo swamp part where it's like waist high water. They can't really see anything. It's super brackish.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be something in the boggy water.
Oh, no. Perhaps a Dianoga or that thing that ate R2-D2 that one time. Who knows? There's a variety of terrifying swamp creatures.
Indeed. And at some point, Dusk sees some, I guess, Rory type of glow bugs in the air and gets all, like, small child and eyes full of wonder and is like, wow, lightning bugs, this is the coolest thing ever. Wow, I love it. Oh, I'm up to my ass in water, and it's just great. And eventually she's like, oh, wait a minute. Tendao hasn't commented on the fact that there are a ton of little light-up bugs. And, oh, no, he's nowhere to be seen.
Dun, dun, dun.
And there's even a little, like, break there where It would be like, oh, we're going to go to a new scene. But it's literally just she turns around and goes, Tendao? Hey, Tendao, where are you? Over here. Okay.
It's true. Yeah. That every time in these couple chapters where you keep thinking something cool's about to happen or something's going to get explained, it just doesn't.
Yeah. God, I know I'm harping on that, the starting break and then the break here between that trying to do a cliffhanger for this, and it just sucks ass so bad.
Yeah.
Anyway,
now can we
yes.
get to the yeah
Tendao has seen the lair, and that's why he fucked off in the bog.
Right. And the lair is just sort of a hump with a hole in it where you can go in. Hey, don't sell yourself short on your hole numbers.
I mean, you didn't say only a hole. It does have a hole. A hole.
Okay, that's true. they go in, and pretty quickly they start establishing that, yeah, this is probably some sort of Borgle nest. There's a lot of picked clean bones and gross smells and unusual flappy sounds that they can hear off in the hollow distance of the drippy cave.
Yeah, and this is a big fucking cave. Like, the first section they go into is, like, vaulted ceiling, a bunch of stalactites. This is not just, like, a cramped little space that they're going through. This is a large cave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And eventually, lo and behold, they spot what's almost definitely a Borgle. It's hovering over something, kind of flapping in place, and I think it's just following MMO flying monster rules, where even though it's a huge bird of some or bat of some kind, it can just hover.
Yeah, it's just...
It just slowly flaps its wings and doesn't move.
Yeah, it just flaps above it and
mm-hmm.
then fucks off, and they're like, oh, that's weird. What was it flapping above? Oh, it's the remains of a squall. Squall Leonhardt is now dead.
They try to rescue him, but all he says is dot, dot, dot.
And apparently a squall is just a rabbit. It's just a rabbit. It has fur and long ears and a hopping gait.
Yeah. It utilizes the principles of hopping instead of rolling.
Yeah.
So this one's a squall. They can actually see the flesh on it, but they decide to follow the Borgle deeper into the cave, hoping to find some kind of nest or something where they can observe more. And as they make their way in, sure enough, they see a few other Borgles, but also they start coming across something very unusual. Fully picked clean skeletons.
Yeah, they've got, they finally do find a group of Borgles. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, good, we actually found a bunch. We can assume that they're blood drinkers because of their sort of elongated faces and the way that the corpse that was left behind, there weren't any, like, blood splatters around the corpse, so it was most likely that they were just slurping up that sweet, dirty red.
Yeah, this is interesting because they've decided that Borgles are a blood-drinking species, basically a vampire bat, but utilizing a very different set of principles than the only vampire bats that we're aware of. Where our vampire bats are vampires because they can't kill anything, so they just sort of flit up next to cows, parasitize them for a couple of seconds, and then fly away with their tummies full of blood. These things suck you dead.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love that. You're mm-hmm. dead, but they keep sucking.
When you dead. But this is an interesting thing for a species to develop. Why would they, if they kill you through blood sucking, why would they leave all that useful protein lying on the ground?
Right? It was a very strange thing. And at least...
Yeah.
We do see some picked clean bones, so we know someone's eaten this.
Right, and I find it unusual that her first question to herself is not, oh wait, are these things killing people or killing animals via blood sucking, exsanguination, and then eating them? But rather, oh, this must be some sort of commensalist relationship. There's probably another kind of animal in here that comes around and eats the meat off these bones.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, no, Occam's Razor says the bats do it.
I mean, you've got an entire cave full of angry murder bats. They're probably big enough to actually eat this, and would.
They wouldn't just leave it lying around when they were done with the blood. They would have killed the thing, and then there's just free food lying around. Evolutionarily, your idea doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
But whatever. I mean, this is Star Wars. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, that's just us being big old nitpickers. They follow the bats that are hovering over the picked clean skeletons into a big chamber full of yet more picked clean skeletons. Everywhere you look, it's just little chambers on the sides that are full of picked clean bones.
Yeah, now, Dusks is like, ooh, I gotta go down this weird little path because I heard something down here. And Tendao follows after her, which freaks her out because she's like, ah, an alien.
Ah, it's an Ithorian. I hate those. But I am in the Empire.
When they're going through and finding this new fully picked clean skeleton area, they hear big flaps. Not like the little flaps of the other bats. Big flaps.
Big flaps, by the way, my nickname in high school.
Ah!
And sure enough, when they go down there, they find their way to, and I'm not sure why it was flapping exactly, because the description of it when they finally see it is that it's more like lurking than flying around. But standing or lying in wait right in front of Dusk is what I have to assume is a raid boss bat, that this is just like some Prima strategy guide shit for people who were playing the MMO in 2004.
Oh, yeah. This is the named Borgle bat that you have to
find. I'm sure its name is like Bloodwing or something, and it probably drops a purple cape. But here we see it, 5 meters long, with a wingspan to match, a giant, heavy, ultra-powerful, automatically assumed by Dusk to be some sort of mutant bat.
And also immediately thinking that it is evil. Like, looks at it and goes, ooh, it's got hateful yellow eyes, and it's an evil mutant, and I'm just like, you're a bioengineer. Stop that.
Yeah, she's apparently a very bad bioengineer. Yeah, because her immediate thought is the malevolence coming off this thing. It's definitely rich in vitamin evil.
Oh, yeah. I used my malevolometer and, ooh, off the charts, baby.
Either we got some Hitler bones in here or it's that big bat. And I'm not prepared to rule out the possibility of a deposit of Hitler bones.
I also just love that she's like, ah, yes, this thing is larger and meaner looking than the other bats we have seen. Clearly a mutant. And I'm like, motherfucker, you know nothing about this species. You haven't even heard of it before yesterday, and you know enough to be like, yes, clearly this is a mutant.
And not just their sexual dimorphism in this species to a scale that's uncommonly or even relatively common here on Earth. The sexual dimorphism is a fairly common event where this could just be the female.
Oh, yeah. I'm just imagining Dusk seeing like some spider and going, ah, obviously that one is a mutant, for it is so much larger than that other one. It has malevolence because it ate its partner.
Well, that's why she's so freaked out and needs to be on Rory, because yesterday she met a mutant human that was several inches taller than her.
Oh my goodness, black hair, you must be a mutant.
A dangerous, evil mutant. Let me get my malevolometer. Oh, whoa, whoa, hold on. I just have a Hitler bone necklace. Okay, she doesn't... This is where you'd think that we get an exciting action sequence. Instead, she gets double freaked out when Tendao, who was behind her, bumps into her a little bit. She squeezes his hand so much she almost breaks it. He sees the giant monster too, and they fuck off.
Oh, yeah. He just sort of grabs her and is like, and we're off. And they run out. We get barely half a paragraph of, oh, man, it sure is hard running through this cave. Anyway, we're safe.
Yeah, they don't engage the giant Borgle bat, nothing happens with the giant Borgle bat, and for the rest of the chapter, Borgles aren't even mentioned.
We don't even get secondary Borgle bat action here, where you'd think they'd been, like, very quietly and carefully going through this cave full of these super aggressive monster bats, and as soon as they start going, whoop, 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 and running away from the giant bat, all the rest of them are like, yeah, yeah, that'll happen. I'm not going to even look.
Oh, man, those things don't look like they're full of delicious blood at all.
That one just looks like jerky.
And so they leave the cave. And like I said, I feel like this is just a couple paragraphs of like fictionalized Prima strategy guide for Star Wars Galaxies. Like, hey, if you go to the moon of Rory, don't forget to check out this hole by this swamp where there's a giant bat you can kill.
Yeah, sweet loots.
I didn't look it up, but I'm willing to bet that this thing is statted, and it probably has its full range of stats on an old wiki somewhere.
Oh, Tendao, there's no denying that creature was a mutant, an abomination of evil. What? Fucking what? Just like five pages earlier, you were like, ah, yes, everything is part of Mother Jungle's many natured way. Why, even diseases are part of the cycle of nature, and we must learn to cope with them. And then you see one big bat, and you're like, that's evil, man. That's pure evil and an abomination.
That ain't supposed to be here. We need to bulldoze that whole thing and turn it into a bookstore.
I got spooked, and fuck that.
Yeah, I kind of get it, because one of the things we do know about Star Wars conceptually is that it is riddled with actual places of evil, where evil stuff tends to grow up.
Yeah, yeah. I know that there are, you know, a bunch of horrible evil Sith monsters and nonsense all over the place. Mm-hmm. But still.
But there's also just some spots that are evil. Like, remember there was that cave on the island where Luke lived in the sequels? And then was the other cave that Luke had to go into on Dagobah.
There's that cave of wonders where only a diamond in the rough can enter it. Aladdin.
I get it. I got it. I knew where it was. You didn't need to say that. Was that for the other listeners, I guess?
That's for the listeners. That's okay. For our young right. listeners who may not have watched Aladdin.
Oh, that reminds me. I showed Sage the first part of Lilo and Stitch today because she has been wearing a lei for 2 days straight now. Mm. And now she's doing little two-year-old hula dances everywhere.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's adorable. Okay, so we're done with Borgles. That's the end of the Borgle story. Now we're walking back. And because I think the author realized, or the authors realized, oh shit, we didn't do anything adventure-y at all. Like at all. They just have a saber-toothed tiger attack them for just, you know, whoops, sorry, here's a cat attack.
And, I mean, it starts with saying that dawn broke, so I'm still not sure how long they've been here, if it was just an overnight trip or not, but whatever. They are headed back to Narmal, and sure enough, Dusk is like, ooh, I hear something, and Tendao's like, nah, you're imagining things. Why... what could possibly attack us here on this safe, boggy swamp of doom?
Rah, yeah, tiger. And that's when a tusk cat comes out of the wilderness and immediately goes lunging after Tendao, who fumbles for his sleek black sea death blaster, but will never draw it in time. So Dusk heroically leaps onto the back of the giant tusk cat and attempts to wrestle it away from her friend.
Yeah, now she has a little... what is it? It's a dagger that is specifically
something.
No, that's
right.
It's a Twi'lek dagger.
Yeah, they mention it. Yeah, she has a Twi'lek dagger from Ryloth.
Yeah. So she's like, ooh, I'm just going to jump on the back of this kitty cat and stab him with a dagger. And boy, that does not make that cat happy.
Nope. In fact, the cat gets a good solid bite on one of her arms and really tears her up pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Probably reducing two of her three health pools.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
She'll need to listen to so many dancers after this.
Right? She's going to go need to see some kind of a doctor somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Some kind of a doctor in a med center, and then after that go to a cantina and listen to some jizz, and that'll make her feel better.
Yeah. Jizz always makes me feel better.
It's true. You just got to get it right up in your ears, and next thing you know, you're feeling great.
Yep.
A natural cure-all. That's what jizz is.
So she gets bucked off this tusk cat, and it goes charging at her, and Tendao manages to blasterize it, and it just falls on her.
Yeah, we get a whole horrible, again, we're trying for cliffhangers within the single chapter, where she blacks out as the cat falls on top of her, and when she wakes up, she can't see anything, and she's like, oh god, what's happened? Where's Tendao? What's wrong with my... Oh, wait, there's a cat on me.
Yeah. Oh, Tendao, help me with this cat? Okay. No, now, all done.
I think the thing I find the most fascinating about this scene is that Tendao just killed some sort of giant nature jungle cat thing, and he just immediately sets about tending to her wounds, and there is not a word spoken that an Ithorian who is terrified of even walking on the surface of planets just killed a motherfucking animal, a big, magnificent predator. There's just nothing. There's no guilt. There's no part where he takes a sample from it. Just nothing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he even says, like, oh, sorry, I wasn't faster, you know, in murdering that creature that I am definitely hold in reverence because of my religion.
Oh, for God's sake. So, he just helps Trent tend her wound, because again, I understand why this happens. We could spend a moment focusing on Tendao and his Ithorian core values and the guilt he's experiencing and how he needs to take samples from it and grow two of them and release them on the moon, just like the last Ithorian we read a book about. But this isn't a book about an Ithorian. This is a book about a girl. And so we have to tend to her needs, and so does he.
Yes. And Tendao helps her, like, just, you know, wraps up her fucked up arm and puts some bandages on there, and they just head back to normal with no further complications.
Yep, that's the end of that. We just did the thing. We got attacked by a monster. You can't go out into the wilderness and come back without at least one mob trailing on you.
Hmm.
And they get back, and we don't even get a part where they go to the doctor's office. We just cut to when they're on the shuttle going away from Rory and back to Naboo.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, this is just more time for Dusk to be like, oh, wow, you know, I'm lucky to know Tendao, and I'm safe, but, oh, that empire, maybe by choosing not to take a chance, I've been choosing not to live, and I still have made a choice.
Yeah. Okay, well, our next chapter is a lot faster.
I mean, this is the next chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. This next chapter is a lot faster than the first one.
There we go.
They land on Naboo. They get separated while they're wandering through the market area looking at stuff. And she's, I think, marveling over some interesting bird that she sees.
Yeah. I mean, both from last chapter and this one, we really get Dusk is kind of flighty on that. Like, if she just sees an interesting animal, she's like, ooh, look at that thing, and just fucks off.
Yeah, no, she is easily distracted, although in this case, it keeps her alive, because she tries to spot Tendao and eventually does, and oh no, Tendao isn't just separated from her, he's surrounded by stormtroopers, and they're accosting him for some reason.
Yes, there's an entire crowd as well that's around them, so she can't even manage to get to Tendao to really find out what's going on and why all of these stormtroopers are surrounding him and fucking with him.
Yeah, now she rushes desperately in an attempt to rescue and aid her friend, but just before she can burst into the clearing surrounding Tendao in the kerfuffle, she is grabbed from behind by strong, manly arms. It takes a while for her to bother looking behind her, but it's obviously Finn again.
I mean, obviously, yes.
And his wake.
Ha.
Yeah.
Ha. I hate you. Okay. And ha.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So Finn grabs her from behind and holds her off while more or less, he's just like, you can't help him now. Stay back, stay back. And sure enough, true to form, the stormtroopers ask him a couple questions, fling him against a pole, and one of them fucking shoots him.
Oh, yeah. Because she's trying to get to him, and he's just like, no, they've got an warrant for an arrest and execution of him. And she's like, well, what the fuck? Why? What has he done? Why are they doing this? And he's like, oh, some Rodian's like, oh, he's a traitor or something, sold some information. I don't know. Anyway, bye. I need to look at this dude getting shot.
Yeah. So, now, Dusk just straight up, like, loses her mind. Obviously, she just watched her friend die in the street in front of her. And so she is lunging, trying to get to these stormtroopers to try and do something to change the situation. But Finn is dragging her off into the crowd. Like, they're, you know, there's nothing you can do. If they kill him, they're going to kill you, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she starts going like, no, you're making a terrible mistake. Wah! And the officer who's in charge of them just starts, like, going for his sidearm while he scans, trying to find who is yelling. And it is very clear that he's like, oh, I'm just going to shoot whoever the fuck this is. And that's when Finn's like, all right, here we go. Arm around the waist and away we go.
Right. So we just settle right back into the same practice we were doing in the casino chapter. Some dude grabs her and drags her around.
Yes, indeed. The classic move whenever you want to deal with Dusk Mistflyer is to just sort of grab her somewhere and take her where you want.
Yep, and she'll just be like, ah, I don't want to go over here, but I will, but I won't like it. And so he starts dragging her through the streets.
And Tendao, I want to say, for his part, does at least take it like a champ. Like,
yes.
He just sort of, like, waves her off when he sees that she's getting all emotional about it, because he very clearly knows, like, oh, they got me. Like, I was definitely selling secrets. Okay. And just kind of, like, walks over to the pole where they want to shoot him at, and he's like, okay, just looks up at the sky, hangs out, and then gets shot. Like, no resistance, just fully fine mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah, yeah, he's ready to go. I still have my pet belief, John, that Tendao is ultimately the bad guy of this book. I'm sure it's not true.
Oh, it's definitely not true. That would be weird and requires some level of setup and interest in doing something with this guy instead of it being the classic, ah, yes, my minority friend told me I should live my life and then died. Now I will for them.
I mean, you're right. This is basically a Star Wars Nicholas Sparks novel. I get it. But but my dream is that he's actually secretly the bad guy. This whole execution is a fake. He knew how distractible she was and that a rebel was trying to locate her for a trip to Dantooine. He's Loam Reg's agent, and this was the most efficient way to set her off on the path to lead him to wherever the hell the Holocron is, where he just kills them both and takes it.
Yeah, but no, not even remotely.
I know, but that would be interesting, and that's why I would like to imagine that's what's going to happen.
How dare you try and imagine anything interesting? That's not what this show is.
They kill him right in front of her, so that's clear. That can't be faked. No way that's what's happening.
No, his chest caves in.
Oh, chests don't get caved in when they get hit with blasters. You just fall down. You just fall down and someone goes, oopsie-doo, and then you have X's over your eyes. This is Star Wars. If an arm comes off, it doesn't even bleed.
Well, I mean, not with a lightsaber. That cauterizes that shit immediately.
You had a good point there. That is how that works. What about if it's lava?
Well, that is also hot. Little
lava indeed
fact.
Hot. Okay, so she isn't really paying attention to where she's even being dragged at the moment. At a certain point, he kind of pushes her up against an alley wall and is like, look, you can't go back there. And she's like, no, justice has to be served. And he's like, no, we need to consider our next move. You can't just go meeting out justice. You're not going to go kill a bunch of stormtroopers.
I mean, honestly, if you try and go back there and kill a bunch of stormtroopers, they will murder you and nothing will have been solved.
Yes. And so he tries to drag her into the, I think it's just a cantina. I'm not sure. I don't remember if it's the cantina, or just some cantina, or the casino again.
There is some cantina that they basically go behind. Like, they go into the alley behind a cantina.
Yeah, because he tries to drag her in there, and she, primarily because she remembers being overwhelmed in the casino a couple of chapters ago, is like, no, not here, not here, no. I don't want to go back into a casino kind of thing. And
well,
his
also,
response is,
she's just seen her best friend die. She's like, I cannot be in a space where there are a bunch of people drinking and laughing and having fun. That will fuck my shit directly up.
Yeah, granted, she doesn't want to go to Party Town. And she's voicing her her complaints, and he agrees for a different reason. He's like, no, you're right. There's way too many eyes and ears in there. We better just go to an alley.
Yeah, all right. Let's go past this crafting station.
God. Here's the spot where you get extra XP if you log out.
God and damn it.
And here we go. The designated RP space for talking secretly.
Ah, yes. And of course, she found it easier to let him pull her around than to actually process what she had just seen. We know,
so
honey.
Far she's...
We know.
She's found it a lot easier to just let dudes pull her around a lot. So he's like, hey, look, at this point, you might as well come with me, because those stormtroopers, if they're looking for him, they are definitely looking for you, because they just killed him for suspected sedition, and you're his closest associate.
Oh, yeah. Even if they don't have a warrant for you right now, it is coming. Like, you can't just go, oh, well, I guess I'll go back to work then. The second you get on a ship and are like, I'm going back to my main lab, there will be stormtroopers there, and you will either be put in jail or shot.
Yeah, and he even reasons with her about this. He's like, Do you seriously think you can go back to your office? Do you have friends there that can help you? And she's like, oh, no, you're right. All I've ever made at work is enemies. I need to go on a life-changing journey of discovery and finding myself.
Yeah, no one at that job is going to stick up for you because, one, sticking your neck out for someone is a good way to get your head chopped off, and two, you don't like anyone there and they don't like you.
Mm-hmm. So, she still doesn't really want to go with him. She's like, I have to go find out why that happened, and I have to go get justice. Vengeance must be served. I am the knight. And he's like, no, that's dumb. Just come with me.
No, that's real stupid. You gotta get the fuck out of here.
And so, after a bunch of badgering and arguing, she more or less just capitulates.
But what about my things?
Oh, yeah. Can I first go back to our hotel room and get my stuff?
Yeah, no. And he's like, no, you can't go back to the place where they know you have things. That is the dumbest thing you can do.
Just bring the samples of the Borgles that you took while you were on Rory. That might come in handy later. Oh, I didn't take any. What? Oh, yeah, we went on a huge mission, and at no point did we ever describe me taking any kind of bioengineering samples from the Borgles.
Oh, we, in fact, specifically mentioned where she's like, oh, man, wish I had gotten some Borgle samples out of this.
I really want that conversation to have happened. Like, wait, why didn't you do that? Isn't that, like, your whole thing? Like, that's how you get XP and stuff, right? By collecting samples from animals. Didn't you even get, like, some of their poop or guano or whatever? And she's just like, nope, we got so scared of the Borgles that we didn't take any samples and we ran away.
Yeah, just didn't even bother taking any samples on the way to finding the big evil mutant. There wasn't a point where we were like, ah, yes, the corpses of things that they have recently fed on or their leavings or anything. No samples, just wandering around being like, ah, this is neat, huh?
Now, at this point, I am desperately hoping that they don't immediately get on a ship and head to Dantooine, because we did a whole chapter on Rory where nothing happened at all.
Yeah.
So unless they're going back there, maybe they go through Restus on their way out or something. What was that? Just a giant waste of time because the book wasn't quite long enough?
Well, it was a full chapter devoted to developing the relationship between Dusk and Tendao so that when they murdered him next chapter, it would mean more. Why, he just saved her life.
Mm-hmm. This is a rare example of Ithorian fridging.
Like I said, this is just a point where it's like, ah, yes, my minority friend has told me to live my life. Now they are dead. It is time to live my life. Now, finally, I, a white person, will be able to do things.
Go live your life, honey. You need to go have sex with that fish man you've been keeping in your tub.
I like at the end of this, even when Finn is like, look, we don't have time for you to fuck around and go back to your room and do a bunch of shit. You are no longer faced with the choice of being able to do anything. You have to leave. And she's like, oh, I've got a choice. And she's like, yeah, you can stay and die or join me.
Come on, I guess, man. If you felt like spending the rest of your life homeless on Naboo, it's not going to be it's a very crowded planet. I don't know if you noticed. The rich people have a lot of space and then everything else is Gungans. So you're going to want to just like it's funny to me that she doesn't immediately seize this as a opportunity. I guess it'll happen in the next chapter for her to be like, you know what, fuck it, I guess I'm joining the Rebel Alliance now.
All right, she agreed, let's go. And she placed her fate in his strong hands. For now, she thought to herself, I'll trust you for now. God damn it, fuck.
For now, I'll trust you for now.
For now. But because only if you're strong, for now.
Because of your strong workman-like hands.
Ah, yes. I will put my fate in your strong, muscly arms. You just want to get lost in them.
And he's like, don't worry, baby. I've got big, strong hands, and I can hold you back if the nothing comes through here.
Well, they do certainly look like big, strong hands.
And she's like, you know what's weird? I don't find this especially sad. Maybe if a horse died. All right. I know it's a short episode, but the chapters weren't that exciting. Hey, would you like some bonus? Because that's everything, right, John? That's pretty much everything that happens.
That's the two chapters, yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, would you like some bonus content? Weird story. We already recorded it. We just, because of schedules and the way things are working right now, we got the bonus content done sooner. But I can tell you, it's a fun one. We discussed a lot of interesting stuff about Star Wars. And you can find that, our expanded, expounded universe, by going to patreon.com/systemmastery and supporting us at the $2 level.
Yes, indeed. You'll unlock our dive into Wookiepedia with some dumb nonsense. And at that level, you also unlock the bonus content for our System Mastery podcast. And if you want to get a little juicy, you want to squeeze out a little more, at the $5 level, you unlock our TV Mastery bonus content and our monthly afterthought, where you can ask us questions and we just talk about topics of the day, interesting things that we have seen, and it is a fun, intimate, joyful time. The most joyful hour of the week, you might say. In fact, let me tell you about a little joyful hour I know called the Church of Garfield. Hey, folks.
Oh, man. Garfield loves to smash spiders. What are the spiders that you'd like to smash, John?
Why, I'd like to smash the spider of sinfulness.
Yeah, I've spent my life attempting to smash the spider of indolence. And, oh, I can tell you, it's a tricky spider, but through the help of Garfield,
I can smash. Put Garfield in smash.
Garfield for smash. Even if he's just an assist trophy where one of those car Garfields from the 80s sticks to the screen.
I would be so angry at that.
If that was the only way that Garfield got into Smash.
Yeah, that should just be his super.
A photorealistic Garfield just sticks to the inside of your TV screen and hangs there for a second before eventually falling off because of heat and bad suction cups. That would be great. Yeah, definitely put Garfield in Smash. After all, he has a number of memorable video games, like no Garfield in Smash. Okay, so thank you so much. Don't forget to buy our new book. It's called Dungeon Meister. You can find it on Amazon. Don't check John Taylor's name, because apparently it's such a common name that as an author, he's instead linked to a guy who wrote a bunch of books about how to steal cars. So good news on that front. But Dungeon Meister is a great book about interesting drink recipes for nerd parties, written by me and John. It's our second book. We couldn't be more excited unless we were writing our first book, which was much more exciting.
Yeah, or thank a good you so book. Much. We would be more excited if we were writing a good book.
Yeah, we say "roting" a lot throughout the book. That's the quality of book you can come to expect.
Yeah, also, well, I'm roting on a horse.
That's also wrong. I know. Roting is. Yeah, it's a book with strong Church of Garfield overtones sprinkled throughout. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I've been Elad Sleazebagiano.
And I hate Mondays.